Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. I'll probably before anything, just to express my delight at being able to be here at Amravati, and particularly during this occasion that the opportunity to recollect and pay respects to Lhopasa Mado in honor of his upcoming 90th birthday, and many people have already arrived and are settling in, and of course many more are still to come. So that this evening being the Lunar Observance Day, it's a good reflection or recollection that Lhopasa Mado has been incredibly diligent these past years, still giving the teachings on the Lunar Observance Days. And it's been great plugging in a day or two after the Lunar Observance Day, and then it shows up on my YouTube feed, and get to watch and listen myself. It's pretty tireless, and tireless for an old man. I mean, it's he's still he obviously gets tired these days, but we're extremely fortunate to still have him here, and to have him healthy to the extent that he is healthy, and but still. Energetic and committed to sharing the Dhamma. So, yeah, I think it's over these next days, of course, there's going to be many people who will be giving reflections and recollections, and many of them will be people who have lived and trained with Ajahn Sumedho for many, many decades, and particularly here at Amravati. But for myself, I'd just like to take this opportunity this evening to kind of recollect some of my own experiences of my contact with Lhopasa Mado, and some of the teachings that still stick in my memory, and hopefully will be useful for people. I first met Lhopasa Mado in 1974, so there's probably a fair number of people who might not have even been born yet at that time. But And I think, you know, in particular, I mean, sort of the, you know, in terms of you know, meeting somebody, but also what's the significance, in particular for Lumpa Samedo, his kind of presence and example of living the Dhamma, living the teachings of the Buddha, and living the teachings, the training of Ajahn Chah, my teacher, our teacher. So that's something that is important, because I think Ajahn Sumedho's presence is not just a sort of some information and knowledge from a book, but it's a lived experience. And I think that's what what we call a Kalyanamitta, a good spiritual friend, is a living example of the possibility of the teachings of the Buddha. And I think that's something that Lumpa Samedho has embodied and for a long time now. And we reflect on, you know, when the Buddha himself described himself to others, he described himself as a Kalyanamitta to the world, a good spiritual friend to the world. And so that's something that you know, Lumpa Samedho has embodied as well. And that's an incredible gift. And I think of my own time of meeting Lumpa Samedho, and I ordained somewhere else and was newly ordained, didn't really have a clue to how to be a monk. I had a whole lot of views and opinions about the Buddha's teachings, but didn't really count for much. But the seeing of another person, and particularly a Westerner, I mean, I was very impressed by and inspired by Ajahn Chah, and he's worthy of inspiration. But it's also, there was something, I think, for me and for others who came those early years to Thailand and to study Buddhism in Thailand, that you're seeing another Westerner living the life of a monastic, and being able to express the teachings, articulate the teachings. When I first met him, he would have had seven vasa as a monk. He would have been a novice for a year, a monk for 7 years, and he was able to articulate the teachings and give guidance and encouragement to the rest of us who'd sort of wandered into Ajahn Chah's monasteries. So that's just a extraordinary gift. And it's something that when we think back, you know, he was pretty pretty young. I mean, you think of the community here, and sort of seven, you know, there's six, seven vasa, you know, how are you feeling? And I'm sure there's I got a lot of practice to do, I got a lot of work to do. And, you know, or 10 or 15 or 20, and still. But Lhasa Mado seems to have had a confidence in the teaching. I also happen to be in the very, very first group that went to establish the international one of Wat Nanachan. But I did spend the first range retreat and the second range retreat with Lhasa Tsamedo. And that was the first, say his first foray into leading a community. He had been teaching and speaking Dhamma and living as a monk with Ajahn Chah. And then he got to begin to have the responsibility of leading community on its own. And it was not easy. And I think for those of us who remember those early days, we weren't very easy for Lhasa Tsamedo either. But we were all pretty, pretty young and stupid. There was a sincerity, and there was a certain energetic keenness, and Lhasa Tsamedo was good at channeling that. I think it wasn't, yeah, it certainly wasn't always easy, and it was certainly frustrating for him at many times. But still, he was not daunted by that, in that he was willing to come with Ajahn Chah, and willing to come to England with the sense that maybe something would happen. It wasn't a sure thing when they came. When they left from Thailand to come to England, it wasn't a sure thing that they weren't all going to be coming back to Thailand, and we continue our life at Wat Nanachat as we knew it at the time. But as circumstances panned out, then Ajahn Chah felt it was appropriate to have Ajahn Tsamedo, Ajahn Kema Dhammo, Ajahn Vira Dhammo, Ajahn Anando stay on in England. And of course, history has been written, and here is the result of that commitment. We're sitting in a temple with many, many monastics coming from many branch monasteries. I think that just the fact that Ajahn Tsamedo was able to come and establish a place here in England and to practice and to live the Dhamma, it was an example for the rest of us who, I stayed back in Thailand, ended up living in Thailand for 23 years until I went to join Ajahn Hamro in America, and we established something there. But it was the example of Lumpo Samedo establishing a place and making it work, making it function as a place for living and training for monastics and the lay community in the West, in a foreign country, in a country that wasn't traditionally Buddhist, so that that there are branch monasteries all around the world now, and you know it's due in no small part to Lumpo Samedo's example and the energy that he put, and it was a lot of. It is a lot of work to live a monastic life and to create places of practice that are, there's a balance of tradition and adaptation that needs to be reflected on, needs to be experimented with, needs to be seen, well, what works, what doesn't work. Lumpo Samedo was very good in reflecting on that. Not trying things out willy-nilly, but trying things out and willing to change when something didn't work, willing to stick with things that were traditional in order to maintain that continuity of our training. So that takes a lot of wisdom and I would say courage. Because oftentimes we either default to what we know and we're familiar with, and what has been passed on to us from the past, or we acquiesce to the kind of the preferences of others and the social pressures of things, and it takes a lot of clarity and wisdom to sort of see, well, what is going to be useful. And so that again, just the evidence of a thriving community is the evidence of Lumpo Samedo's clarity and wisdom. And of course the reality is that, was that smooth? Was it all absolutely right and correct and perfect all the time? No, but it's still a work in progress. We still have to, and that's something that, again, part of, I think, these days of reflecting in gratitude and appreciation of Lumpo Samedo's, the gift of his life and example, is also reflecting on what do we take and internalize for ourselves for qualities that we need to, want to, are willing to embody within ourselves and implement in our life of practice and training and living a life of Dhamma, living a life of adhering to the Buddha's teachings. So I think that's something to carry as a reflection over these next days as the numbers of people ramp up and the amount of busyness increases, keeping a reflective perspective on, what can I learn from this occasion for myself? It's not just about Lopa Samedo. What are we learning? What can we learn from his life and example that will be a benefit to many? And that's something that I think Lopa Samedo is quite exceptional in his from my background of living in Thailand for so long, the sense of him being someone with immense barami, just accumulated goodness and qualities that things happen around, lots of good happens. He's a catalyst for tremendous good, and this temple and the physical manifestations of that goodness and the diversity of the community that's here is an evidence of that. But it's in each of us in our way. What can we be learning as well? I think that's where it's helpful to recollect some of the the teachings because there's the physical example or the life example of Lopa Samedo, but it's also what are the teachings that are really important to him that he's been trying to convey to us over all these years, because it's the teachings that are important, and that's the living a life of Dhamma that transforms us from ordinary human beings into awakened beings, if we're willing to do it. Some of the teachings that I remember, and of course I haven't lived and trained with him as much as many of the senior monks that are here. But over the years, I have had quite regular contact from time to time. And his teachings resonate in those, in early days and in to this day. I mean, certainly from the very earliest days, and of course in his own accounts, it's when he recollects what was important in his practice, and you hear him teaching. It was just his last Dhamma talk, the last one, Four Noble Truths. Because You know, as long as we're studying the Buddha's teachings, practicing the Buddha's teachings, then we're going to keep hearing about the Four Noble Truths. And of course, this is a theme that Lhunpo Samera said was really important to him right from the year that he was a novice before he met Ajahn Chah. That was the one book that he had that he read and reread was a small book on the word of the Buddha. Jnana Tiloka, the word of the Buddha. And it's just a small book on the Four Noble Truths. And that was the book that he read over and over again for practice. But of course, it's what the Buddha himself said. I teach only two things, dukkha and the ending of dukkha. So that it's through not seeing, not understanding these Four Noble Truths that we've wandered in samsara for innumerable lifetimes. And so that to pay attention to the Four Noble Truths, and pay attention to what is this thing that we call dukkha, the sense of discontent, dis-ease, dissatisfaction, sense of stress, of suffering. And what is it that is its cause, and not looking to external causes, and not looking out at the world around us and to woe is me, we live in an unfair, miserable world. So what do I contribute to it? What do I complicate it with? What do I make a problem out of it with? And that's the different forms of desire, sense of clinging to the gratification of our preferences, our desires in sensuality, sense gratification, stimulation, excitement. Could be quite innocent, but it still keeps our mind off balance or keeps our heart craving. It won't settle. And same with the sense of becoming and being, trying and formulating senses of preference around this sense of self, sense of me, that I am energy. And it's whether I am good or I am bad, I am young, I am old, I am whatever, just that I am energy, that bhava tanha, because we bhava tanha, that not wanting shouldn't be this way. I don't like it. How do I get out of this? As we bhava tanha, that clinging and grasping to that energy, it keeps the heart shaking and unstable. So to be able to be interested in relinquishment, interested in letting go, interested in letting that kind of energy cease. And that's of course, that's what the Buddha puts it, the ending of dukkha, ending of suffering, ending of dis-ease, dissatisfaction, is the willingness to let cease that movement of heart that's not settled. So it's saying the and taking an interest in that cessation as a possibility. And because oftentimes we don't even conceive of the possibility of respite from being discontent or dissatisfied. Then picking that up as a theme of investigation. What's the catalyst? And of course, the path, path of practice, path of training, sila, samadhi, banya, the virtue and integrity, this cultivation of mindfulness and stability of heart, and directing attention to discernment and understanding, wisdom. Well, that's the, say, we can turn our attention to that. But also, I mean, I think one of the things that Lopo Sumedho was really good at was pointing us to the possibility in this present moment. And that was certainly a theme that he taught for many, many years, begin a Dhamma talk or begin a reflection to the past is a memory, future is unknown, now is the knowing. This quality of the knowing, the possibility of a knowing awareness in this present moment, not as something that we create or formulate or hang on to desperately, but that we realize, recognize as a part of our, just the fundamental foundation of the heart. And directing attention to that, now is the knowing. And it's not excluding anything, pushing anything else away, but recognizing. Because it's something that, because the way the mind works is, we feel that we're being impinged on, we feel that we're being put upon by our sense of self, put upon by the sense of the world around us. But that's a construction that is sort of layers of delusion to it. And it feels real, on clear investigation with a stability of awareness, attention, it falls apart. Something that's, think of the Buddha himself, when asked, what the, the world, what is the world? And the Buddha is replying very simply, that whereby one perceives the world and conceives of the world, that is the world. And so that we dwell living in perceptions and conceptions, that conceptualizing of things, perceiving things, stuck in the memories of the past, conjectures about the future, And we forget that now is the knowing. And it seems so simple. But, you know, when we disregard the power of that, then we miss the opportunity to really taste the freedom of the teachings that the Buddha, this Dhamma that the Buddha has given us. And so it's just being able to reflect on that, investigate that. Another aspect that rings in my memory of Lopa Samedo's theme that comes up over and over in that sense of really taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, which is, of course, in terms of the fundamentals of a Buddhist life, whether one is a layperson or a monastic, is that taking of refuge of Buddha Dhamma and Sangha. But Lopa Samedo would always emphasize that that sense of the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha is like the Buddha, the one who knows, or this knowing, this ability to know, that's innate to the heart, this knowing, and knowing the way things are, just the knowing of Dhamma, the Buddha knowing the Dhamma. And then that's the opportunity that we have, say, as Sangha, as disciples of the Buddha. So the drawing of the example that Lopa Samedo has set over these many years as someone who keeps turning to a refuge that is beyond the self and the world, and is a refuge that transforms and awakens. That is, see, well, this is possible. It's not far away. It's not beyond the possibility of a human being born in this realm, in this time, in this place. So that is a say an opportunity for all of us, and tremendous respect and gratitude is appropriate, I think, to be showing in these days that come. So that this is a few reflections from myself this evening. Offer it.
Andamayam dhammakatha sadhukaram dadamase sadhu 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 anumodam.